Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome back to another episode of Confessions of a Crabby Christian,
a Misfit Media Network production.
I am your host and resident Crabby Christian, Blake, and every week I get to have the coolest conversations with incredible people about all the things most Christians are still not sure we're allowed to talk about. So if you've been looking for a place to land with all your crap, and for someone to just be honest about what it looks like to walk through this Christian life, well, you've come to the right place. Pull up a seat, pop in your headphones and tune out your kids, and come hang out with me and a guest for the authentic conversations that you have been looking for. Hey, Brandy, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
This is one of my favorite subjects. People that have been listening to the show for a while will know that there are quite a few sexopodes, sexopodes, something like that. Mm-hmm. But it's a prevalent conversation in my book and on the show because it is one of the more prevalent things that I find female Christians are just kind of like struggling to navigate. And a lot of the time it can be because
they're so curious about.
Right. We have a lot of questions because we're getting a lot of not great information, I would say.
Right.
And so today we're going to talk about like the sex myths that Christians believe, which is your wheelhouse. You have multiple books that you've put out, not just about sex, but about just kind of these general subjects. So before we jump in, can you tell us just a little bit about like your ministry, your work, your books, what you've done?
Yeah, sure. So I am a marriage and family therapist and a professional counselor, and I've been doing that for 15 years. All the writing has really just come out of that in my own personal experiences within the church and in the world and in my office. So yeah, I mean, my book's like kind of pretty wide range. I've got some parenting stuff. I've got some sex ed stuff. I have some kind of personal narrative. I would call it narrative therapy work. Mm-hmm. So it's all kind of flushed out of the professional world though. So
right.
Specifically with the sex stuff, if you're curious about that, I mean, for a long time have been seeing Christians come into my office, or even just people who grew up in the conservative world who have a lot of confusion, a lot of pain, really wrestling through wanting to have good sex lives, wanting to feel good about themselves, and really struggling. And I, for so long, could not find any good content. Nothing that I trusted, nothing that was consistently good biblical scholarship, a lot of patriarchy framework, and I didn't feel good about handing anyone anything. I was like, I've got some ideas, and I can read page 92 and page 12, and that's it. Don't read anymore.
Right. You're like handing them a bookmarked book. You're like, just read these parts.
Yeah. And I didn't want to do any more damage. So ended up kind of pitched it to my church and said, hey, I really think the body needs better teaching on this. And they ended up eventually coming back and saying, yeah, we really want to do this. We don't just want to do it for women. We want to do it for women and men. And I said, well, that's great. I don't want to just do it for married people. I also want to do it for single people. I mean, everybody needs it. So we did a big course at our church, and that was all compiled into a workbook. And now that's on its way to becoming an online course by May. I don't know when you're going to release this, but by May it should be out and can be accessible that way too.
That's awesome. And just to have the church come alongside you, you know, and be like, yeah, like let's do this and do it well. Because to your point, this is unfortunately an area that it's not that Christians aren't being educated about it. It's that a lot of the messages coming out of the church are damaging about this particular subject.
Yes.
One of the things that you talk about, I've talked about a ton, is purity culture and just, you know, the damage that that did to like a couple of generations, you know, that now we're adults
I think trying to kind of turn that tide a little bit.
Yeah, let's do better. And we definitely can.
And we can, like, because it's, we have scripture. We know this God who created this act and this part of us.
Yeah.
Like, Christians should have the best things to share about it because we know the guy that created it.
Right. We have scripture, we have history, and we also have science. And all of those are, I think I would call all of those works of God. All of those are evidence of God's work.
Yeah.
And show us how he works and what he's trying to do. But absolutely, we should be utilizing all of those resources to know God and to know his word and to understand how our bodies work and so that we can be good stewards of what we have.
Yeah, absolutely. So I pulled a couple of the sex myths that Christians in particular, I find fall prey to.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of them. Mm-hmm. Like, this could be a 3-hour episode, but one that I've actually seen you talk about in your content that I thought was really intriguing is the idea that we have that anytime you think about sex, it immediately equates to like the sin of lust.
Right, right.
And you kind of turn that on its head and say, I mean, is that what it is?
Right. I know. I kind of want to pull out my definition of lust in the book because I worked on it so hard. Yeah. And I think you're right. I actually didn't realize how much of a problem that particular myth was for men.
Mm.
But there are so many men in the church who have been taught using the word lust and applying it to the way their minds work. So many men have been taught that their minds are bad because their minds are lustful, because their minds focus on sex or notice sexual things and sexuality. I didn't realize this until after I actually taught this one of the first sessions, and I had several men come up to me afterwards and say, with tears in their eyes, I just feel so set free to be able to believe that I'm not bad for noticing when a woman is beautiful or when I think about sex during the day and I crave that, you know, they just have been told so much. And so, I don't know, like, it's pretty big shift. So let me read this definition of lust for you. The ravenous use of one's mind to imagine what it would be like to have something that does not currently belong to you. This can be possessions like cars or luxury items, or sexual, like a sexual conquest. Thinking about sex does not constitute lust. Recognizing sexuality or beauty does not constitute lust. A sexual mind is not automatically a lustful mind. To see that a person is attractive does not force you to turn them into a sexual object. You can look them in the eye, recognize their beauty, enjoy engaging with them as they are, a whole person, without making them into an object. A mind becomes lustful when it gravitates towards consumption of the object, taking something or someone and actively imagining using them for your own pleasure. Lust is a choice, not a compulsion.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Yeah. I think the big thing that people don't recognize is that you have a choice with the way that you think about sexuality. And so many people are wired to think about sex in a very consumptive way, in a way where they are consuming others. I am getting someone and taking them and using them for my own pleasure and never considering how they feel, what they want, what they need, who they are. I'm just using them as an object. And frankly, women can be guilty of this as well. You know,
100%.
The moment we are watching someone on television, you know, I watched Good Will Hunting the other night, love that movie so much. And Will is so good looking, right? Like,
right.
I could in that moment immediately start using the image of him and the character that I see of him and turning him into an object that I can use for my own pleasure. I can do that just as easily as a man could do that with any other woman.
Right.
But if I can also say, damn, he is really good looking and he's a great actor and this is a phenomenal show, And he's so much more than that.
Right.
He's so much more than that. I don't even know Matt Damon's personal life, but, right, you know, he probably has connections. He has people. He may have a wife. He may have children. I don't know. I'm not much of a pop culture person, but there's so much more to Matt Damon than his one character on Good Will Hunting.
Right.
And I can enjoy and appreciate that he is beautiful. He's good looking. He's even sexually appealing without turning him into an object that I use for my own pleasure, that really doesn't respect him as a human being at all, that just turns him from a human into an object. So that's what lust is. Lust is turning people into things and then using them for our personal use instead of relating to them as human beings created by God who deserve respect, regardless of whether or not we've ever interacted with them or even know them as a person.
I think it goes back to, you made the point earlier of that men are taught that their minds are bad. Mm-hmm. And a lot of what purity culture taught was your mind is bad. And then kind of that was it.
Yeah.
No real tools for self-control, which is what is missing, right? Me personally, I don't have a problem with it if my husband recognizes that another woman is beautiful. He's not blind.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not asking him to like wear a blindfold everywhere we go, but does it stop there?
Right.
Does recognizing this person's attractiveness and like you were saying, allowing them to stay human, or do you dehumanize this person to your point of being an object?
Right.
That if we were teaching self-control instead of bad.
Right.
Hand slap, bad. No, don't.
Right.
It's like Romeo and Juliet complex we're giving men where it's like, don't touch, like wet paint, don't touch. What do you want to do? You want to touch the wet paint.
Immediately touch it.
Right, immediately. So I think that it's a self-control and taking your thoughts captive conversation so much more than really a very sexual conversation.
Right. I mean, I love and would love for people to celebrate the fact that they have sexual desire. I actually think that's a beautiful, good thing. Can we just call that good when someone notices beauty or when someone feels sexual attraction? Can we just say, yeah, that's good. Of course. It's a bonding element. It's something that draws us to others. It's good. It's designed for good purpose. And yes, it can be twisted and used for bad. And sometimes when we feel out of control of that desire, it's often because we have some wound that's unaddressed and undealt with, an unhealed attachment wound. Absolutely needs to be dealt with. Absolutely needs to be addressed. I love giving references. There's a book called Unwanted by Jay Stringer. If you can get him on here, you're gonna hit the jackpot. he's wonderful. And all of his research is about attachment wounds and how it affects our sexual behavior. And they are correlated. They are one-to-one correlated. When we have sexual desire, they're connected to our attachment wounds. So if we have desire, nothing wrong with that. The thing that excites us gives us information. It gives us information about who we are and how we're made. And when we learn how to deal with all of those wounds that we have, when we're able to understand, and I would say harness our sexual desire, when we're able to harness it and use it for good, that is being self-controlled. It's the idea that it's something you can get a hold of and do something with, rather than a wild animal that just takes you off down the road into the woods and you have no idea what's going on and you're out of control and you can't manage it. And
right. Which is a lot of people's experience with lust. Like they think,
right,
or sexuality in general, maybe not even just lust. Right. Like a lot of people think it's this, like, I love that. It's a wild animal that's just going to like ravage everything.
Right.
So I'm just gonna stay away from it completely.
Right.
Which is not our design. You made the point earlier that, like, I think about often in terms of having sexual conversations that we serve a God who intentionally and complexly designed us.
Yes.
And if sex wasn't supposed to be fun, there's a lot of nerve endings that wouldn't exist. And there's a lot of functions that wouldn't even be a part of our bodies.
Right.
If it was just for procreation, if it was just a marital duty.
Right.
It wouldn't be fun. So like,
no,
made it this. And I feel like there's also a spectrum, right? There's the side of Christianity that's like, do whatever you want. There's no rules. And then there's the side that's very oppressive and puts things into a box. I think you often find God and who he really is in the middle of,
yes,
this is good and it's meant to be fun and it's meant to be enjoyed in a connective experience, but like, don't get crazy. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Well, just recognize that there are the boundaries that exist are boundaries that help us to demonstrate God, right? I mean, God himself is self-controlled. God chooses when to take action and when to stop taking action. And, you know, he punishes for a time and then he stops. He has a right to punish forever, mm-hmm. but he only elicits the sins of the forefathers on third and fourth generation. Only three or four generations. And then he stops. He could have been like, y'all have to suffer forever for y'all these consequences of your fault. But he doesn't. He said, I show blessings to thousands of generations, right? Like he is so good at being self-controlled. Our self-control absolutely is honoring to God. And I think you can. I agree with you. You can strike a balance between wide open, free for all, self-consuming, self-absorbed, self-centered behavior. Or you can be so shut down. Honestly, I think that the side of things that gets so shut down and locked in a box, I honestly think that's very self-centered as well, because it's all about me and my amazing ability to control rather than the incredible God who blesses and is good. And I'm doing good work with in a teamwork type situation.
Yeah.
Rather than it's just me and my amazing holiness or whatever people want to call that.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.
So if somebody that's listening this is kind of blowing their minds a little bit, right? That wait, lust and sexual like thoughts and desire are not the same thing. What's first step towards changing that narrative for them? Because it's going to take like discipline and practice to either end of it, right? To either not immediately like incur shame and guilt,
right,
when the way that they are hardwired happens. Or there may be people that are listening that are like, oh shoot, I've let this get away from me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. My first step is always going to be to encourage people to be honest with themselves. I'm a huge fan of what I would call trash journaling. So these are not your pretty cute little journals that you write in with your lovely pen and you're trying to produce for generations to come who are going to want to read your thoughts when you were 20. It's not that. It's a piece of shit notebook with a good pen, because good pens do make a difference.
But
it's a trash notebook that you sit down and you say, what do I really think about this? And then you write without filter.
Yeah.
You let yourself be honest about what you're feeling, about what you're thinking, and you don't judge yourself, and you don't have to share it with anyone. You're just being honest with yourself. The Lord knows.
Right, exactly. You're not telling him anything new.
No, the only one who's in the dark here is you. Like, you're the one that has to be honest about it with yourself first. And that's a really like no shame way to start, you know, rather than in a public sphere. And then once you're able to kind of flush that out and see what's in your heart and in your mind about these things, then you can sort through what to do next. Usually my next step recommendation is to find you a really good counselor.
Yep.
Because counseling is designed to be safe. It's designed to be ethically protected from anybody else knowing. Your counselor is trained to walk alongside you as you're sorting through the scariest, darkest things ever. They're not going to tattle on you. They're not even going to tell you what to do. They're just going to be with you so that you're not alone in the dark there.
Yeah.
And that makes all the difference in the world to a human being to feel like you're not alone wrestling through something that's really difficult. And then, you know, from there, we work on like developing a safe community. Who can you actually share these things with? You know, sometimes it's your family, but sometimes it's not your family. Yeah. You know, sometimes it's, I would say, in emotionally healthy churches, sometimes there is a pastor, but I personally am really skeptical of a lot of pastors because most of them haven't done their emotional health work. And most of them are still operating with kind of a patriarchal lens. And frankly, they're not trained to be counselors. Pastors right. are not trained to be counselors. So they're good. They're good people. I don't want to throw them under the bus. They're good people. My gosh, they do so much. I all the time I'm telling my pastor, I do not want your job. Like, I never want to be a pastor because you guys are expected to do everything and do it in the name of God. And you represent God to so many people. And that's way too much pressure for me. But they're not trained to be counselors. Mm-hmm. And so they can show you things in the Bible. They can help you dig through the Bible. You know, they're often very kind, but they're not trained to walk with you through psychological, mental, emotional issues. And the shame that often bubbles up for people when they are digging into their own sexuality is immense. Mm-hmm. It's ugly and it's scary and it's overwhelming. And you really want to, as you're starting to dig through with other people, find people who are not going to add anything to that shame. Mm-hmm. People who can say, I see you, I hear you, I love you. Yeah, that's messed up, but it's cool. We're here together.
Yeah. Yeah.
That kind of like, yikes, but I'm not leaving.
Right. Well, because that the shame, I think, holds a lot of people back from even starting the amount of shame that they're already kind of feel like they're drowning under. And the unfortunate reality mm-hmm. of going through this stuff is it's like going to get worse before it gets better usually.
Right.
And so yeah. I love the idea of a trash journal. I love mm-hmm. that where it's like, you could go get you like a little 99 cent spiral bound mm-hmm. and just, yes. I really honestly just recently started being like brutally on it. I'm just throwing these things away. Like, I don't want my kids to read them. Mm-hmm. Nobody needs to read yes. them. Also, who's going to do
you throw
that?
Away, I burn them. I burn okay. them. I'm all yeah. about the burn. I love for me, that. It's therapeutic to burn them. I also burn books I don't like. If I don't yeah. like it, I'm like, I'm taking it out to the fire pit. We're burning it. Let's get yeah. rid of this. Feels good.
Yeah. Yeah. But I think like that as a first step, I think a lot of people would assume, especially as a counselor, that the first step is like straight to counseling, which isn't a bad thing, but kind of like sure. figuring out where you are. Like, let me.
Yeah.
put myself on the map before I try to invite someone else into the conversation. I think you can find a lot of healing just starting there, just by being honest. Like, I loved
what I agree.
You said about like, you're not surprising God.
Yeah.
God's sitting up there like,
no.
Oh, here. Okay, cool. We're going to finally have this conversation. Awesome. Uh-huh. Like, welcome. I've been waiting. Like, welcome. Mm-hmm. Because I do think, especially, I think it's really interesting to look at generationally, but sexual trauma, pain, baggage, lies, myths, I think that holds Christians back so much.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's the world isn't, it's just a different way, but I think it has the amount of power it has because we don't talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, we'll talk about it in the like sweet, here's a way to like make your sex life better. And it's like, mm-hmm. that's great. Thank you. That information is necessary, but like, there's a lot going on over here. Like, yes. I need a way to sift through that.
Yes. Yeah. There's gotta be more. I agree. And I think like, I mean, there's a saying and there's a theory called emotionally focused therapy. And one of the sayings they have is conflict breeds intimacy and intimacy breeds conflict. And for so many Christians, we avoid conflict because it feels like we're going to break up and that's scary to us. Mm-hmm. But if we can engage with the conflict, that's actually where we find deep intimacy. And this is true with your sex life as well. Like, we have to talk about the hard things. We have to talk about, especially when you've got a spouse, if we're not talking about what's not working for us, then that means one of us is probably suffering silently. Mm-hmm.
And the other one's clueless.
Right. They're not feeling connected. And they're like, why is this so blah? Like, right. Why are we not actually feeling good here? So there's not connection happening there. And it's because we're avoiding doing the hard work of talking about the hard things. You know, I've shared this before, but I'm such a fan of, it's like conflict is like washing the dishes. You would never use a lasagna pan. And then when you're finished eating the lasagna, you would never just stick that pan back in the cabinet.
Right.
You would wash it. You would get it out. You would scrub it. You would probably let it soak for a while. You know, all these conditions around washing the pans and doing the work to wash the pans makes it possible for you to have a good use of that pan later.
Yeah.
And our relationships are the same way, especially our sexuality. If we are just avoiding looking at the junk, I don't want to look at that. You know, I'm avoiding it. I'm just going to put it back in the cabinet. Then over time that gunk just builds up. And frankly, we get sick. That's what happens.
Yeah.
People end up acting out of that mess that's under there rather than addressing it consciously and then being able to have the conscious power over those things to live freely. They can't because they're avoiding even looking at it.
Right. I love an analogy. And to your point, like if you let that pan sit there for long enough, it's going to get moldy.
Mm-hmm.
The pan's going to get to a point where it can get beyond the point of saving. Like no Dawn
right.
is touching what is happening in that pan. And so my husband and I jokingly say like going to counseling for us is like having a tune-up on our car.
Yes.
I'd rather tune it up than wait until it stops working.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's scary. I know that there can be this illusion that needing counseling means you're not okay, that you're like about to break mm-hmm. up or that your sex life is terrible. What if it's not that things are bad? It's just that you know they could potentially be better.
Right. Right. You want better.
Right. And there's nothing mm-hmm. wrong with that. Like, I think if things are great, great. There's probably still room to be having some conversations that maybe are a little uncomfortable, but are necessary.
Right. And that will take us deeper into connection with one another. I think that's a super cool thing about long-term marriages, which it's pretty rare for people to make it a long time and still like each other.
Oh, yeah.
There's lots of people. I know lots of people, especially one generation older than me, they have stuck together. They're really good at sticking together, but they don't like each other anymore.
They don't even
know
each other.
They're just making it. Right.
Yeah.
And I really think it's possible to have a long-term marriage where you still enjoy your partner, where you still like each other and you still want to be together because you like them, not just because you think you're going to get shamed for divorcing or because you think you can't financially survive without them.
Yeah.
I want to like my partner. We've been married over 20 years. I want to like him for 40 more. You know, I want to still like him. I want to like him more than I did yesterday.
Exactly.
You know, I want to keep figuring out how we work. I want to go through these different life stages together and I want to enjoy them. I don't want to hate them or just endure them. I want them to be good. And I really think that's possible.
We always say like life is going to be hard. I'd rather it be me and him against the world than us against each other.
Yes.
You know, like,
yes,
I'd rather that. The hard come from outside, not from in our home.
Between us. Yeah.
And it does like, it requires sitting down and like kind of like ripping off the Band-Aid. My parents have been married 37 years, 6 years.
Yeah.
And I know that they have difficult, even today, they've been together forever mm-hmm. and they still have difficult conversations communicating expectations and desires and like frustrations. And my parents are still obsessed. They're the cutest. Like they're still obsessed with each other, you know? And so it's like, you have to be willing to do the hard so that you can enjoy the good.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's cool stuff you find when you go digging, there's cool stuff you find about each other.
Oh, yeah.
Really beautiful creativity and unique interests. And even being married 20 years, I'm still figuring my husband out and liking him. Like, I'm like, really? You like that? That's cool. Why do you like that?
Yeah.
Tell me more, you know?
Yeah. I love that.
Still surprises.
I love that. Well, we were going to cover more than one myth, but we got real honed in on one. And I kind of love that because that when I was reading through your content, that really blew my mind. This idea that they are not the same. I think I like cognitively knew that, but just seeing somebody say it, and I know that's going to hopefully like set people free and also hopefully inspire some really good conversations, because I do think, and this is not a slight at all, but I think we as women can hold our men to that standard that any sexual thought that passes their mind is lust, and be
right
piling shame onto something that they may already be struggling with. So I think that's just like really like collaborative conversation that couples can have of how are we defining this? What am I comfortable with? What are you comfortable with? Like, how do we both have discipline and self-control while not putting each other in a box?
Right. For sure. And I mean, how great would it be if spouses can start having conversations about attraction, even for one spouse to say like, ooh, he's really good looking, or, you know, like, that was exciting. And the other spouse to not say, what, you know,
right,
but to rather respond with curiosity, like, oh yeah, you like that? What do you like about that?
Yeah.
What about that works for you? And, you know, just for that to be an inspiring, fun conversation that they can have about attraction and excitement, and just dig into their own sexual dynamic by using that little spark.
Yeah.
I mean, how cool would that be? I think that would be so much better than having these like shamey conversations, or one spouse just feeling terrible about themselves and kind of hiding.
And no conversation at all.
Right.
Yeah. That's awesome. Tell people where they can follow you, keep up with you online and everything.
Yeah. So my website is ittakesabreath.com. And it's from basically, if you're ready to heal, all it takes is a breath. ittakesabreath.com. And I do have books there and other podcasts I've participated in and online courses, that kind of stuff. I'm pretty active on Instagram, a little bit of TikTok. Instagram's just Brandy K. Harris. I think TikTok's the same thing. And I'm on Facebook as well. It's probably a different crowd than your people, but I am on there as well. So you can find me any of those three social media platforms and on the website.
Awesome. Brandy, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
All right, that's it for this week. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of the Crappy Christian Podcast. And hey, by the way, if you super loved it, can you go leave a 5-star review wherever you're listening? That'd be awesome. All right, see you next week.
If you're in business, you probably have a website, but can your site handle your growth? How many visitors before your site slows down or crashes? What about storage and data security? From web hosting to virtual servers, Pear Networks provides the online infrastructure you need to start, grow, and flourish. When it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. No frustrating chatbots or sitting on hold for hours. Check out pear.com today to learn more. That's PAIR.com.